Shropshire
with Jim Hawkins.
BBC Radio Shropshire, 96 FM, with Jim until 12. And over the past months on this programme, we've visited spiritualist churches, we found out about paganism, and I was talking to someone a couple of months back who mentioned that there was a Buddhist establishment in Telford, which came as a tremendous surprise to me. I had no idea that there was. You may not know very much about Buddhism. You may be familiar with words like Zen, the name of the Buddha himself, and you may know that, for example, Tina Turner and Richard Gere are quite well-known celebrity Buddhists, if you like. But in order to find out a bit more about Buddhism, I've come to Telford's Buddhist Priory, and I'm here with what's your official title, actually, Saido?
My name is Reverend Saido Kenaway.
And you're Reverend, are you a priest or celebrant, or what's the term?
I'm a priest and monk, Buddhist monk.
Tell us a bit about your personal history, first of all. How did you come to Buddhism?
I think it was at a time when I was searching for some meaning to my life. One of the things which really brought me up short was seeing someone who was a fitter for a large piece of machinery, because I used to be involved in sewage works. It's a great, because everyone was banging on about pollution and how to clean it up, and it seemed like a good idea to get a job doing something like that. And seeing someone who was working one day, speaking to him that evening, and then seeing him the next day basically in pieces in this large machine, and seeing how transient life was, and also beginning to question, well, how much pollution have I cleaned up today? I've been driving around my car, I was a chemist, you know. There's a question mark about that. I don't like thinking about, you know, I don't think like this now, but at the time it sort of made me think, well, what's the main thing about I should do with my life? And it seemed that a lot of the world's problems are really caused by greed, anger and confusion, and that in a sense you can't do anything much about that externally, because I had to go. But you can do something about it internally, because when you actually start to analyze and see what is a lot of the world's problems, they're individuals who act in a certain way, and they act either greedily, or they push things away, or they get angry, or they hurt each other, or they're quite confused and don't see the consequences of their actions. So if you want to change the world, you change the bit of the world you really can change, which is you. And Buddhism is very much geared in that kind of direction. It's like the individuals are the part of the universe, if you like, and that we're therefore responsible for what we do.
Tell us about the Telford Buddhist Priory. It's from the outside, it looks like any large suburban house tucked away in the cul-de-sac in the rock.
It's happened because of a group of people who've been practicing Buddhism for a number of years. I think there's a group here in Edgemond and later on in Telford. The people, you probably speak to them later, had a meditation group for over 14 years. And then it came about that we could buy this property and use it to practice in. It gives us a bit more space to do it. It's almost like the first step on the ladder to be able to have a place you could practice in. And so it's been here for about 8 years.
And what happens here?
Basically, people come along and they learn how to do this particular form of Buddhist meditation. And there are also ceremonies.
What form do the ceremonies take?
The Buddha isn't a god. He's not someone who one worships in that kind of way. The Buddha is someone who points out how to find release from our sense of unsatisfactoriness or stress. And points that that doesn't need to happen. And there's an explanation of why we find ourselves going round the loop of anger and worry and frustration, and then, oh dear, how do I get back to there again? It seems my life is constantly going round in this loop, and there's a way of actually seeing why that happens, liberation from that, and a path of practice that leads to finding that. So just about every Buddhist tradition has some kind of ceremony which has very similar components. There's some form of offering. There's the reciting of some kind of Buddhist text, which is teaching. there are bows, because bowing in a sense helps you cultivate respect and gratitude, just as the meditation position helps you find your, helps still your mind. Bowing helps you cultivate that attitude of gratitude and respect, which is so lacking. But it's something which we have to find within ourselves for something greater than just me, 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 something greater. So it's like one bows to what is really the true reality. So there's bowing, there's offering, and then there's some recitation of Buddhist teaching. And the good effects of that are always offered either to everyone or to a specific person or in memory and gratitude to a group of people. And that's the kind of format of a ceremony.
You mentioned meditation. Tell us a bit more about the meditation part of it.
Buddhism has gone through various countries and cultures, and there are some differences in how it's expressed, basically. And there are some different Buddhist practices, because also people are rather different. They each need something different for them to practice with, and some practices suit others better, and some better than others, if you like. And this particular practice is a very direct, very simple practice. And it's just seating meditation, where you just sit still. And just sitting still sounds incredibly simple, and in fact it is, but because we're rather complicated, we make it into something which is quite difficult for us. Because when you start to sit still and just have nothing in front of you except a wall, which your eyes rest on, then you become much more aware of your mind and the way your mind works, which is rather uncomfortable, because it throws up all of the things which you want to avoid. Your irritation, your anger, your worry, your despair is right in front of you, in a sense. But this is really helpful, because if you can see what you're doing, you can learn to just allow it to go, let it to dissolve, in a sense. And so these things, in a sense, no longer run you around as much as they used to do. You have to accept what's going on, and then you get better at just letting things fall away, letting things dissolve.
It must be difficult for some people at first, though, to start meditating in the search for a kind of inner peace, and to find themselves confronted, as soon as they start to do that, by all the things they're trying to get away from.
Yeah, but in a sense, the peace is already there. It's just that you have to see what's causing the disturbance, and then put that to rest. That's a practice. It's like going to the gym. You go to the gym to practice getting fit. You come to a meditation hall to practice letting things fall away, letting things dissolve, putting things, you get better at not getting so involved in your thoughts, feelings and emotions. It doesn't mean you're trying to push them away or negate them. It just means that you're not run around by them so much, because you see what you're doing with your own mind. So with our mind, we make the world. So if you're angry, frustrated or confused, you will make, everything will appear, everyone will be angry, frustrated and confused. So if you can do something about the way that you look at things, your view of the world changes. And if you change that, it changes everything around you. It changes your state of mind, actually affects other people.
We're here in the main room, for the wrong phrase, of the priory. Just show me around a bit. There's a very large centerpiece here.
Yes, there's a large Buddha statue. It's not huge. there's a large Buddha statue, and the Buddha statue, if you like, this is a giant teaching aid. This shows something which is bright, serene, fearless. And people quite like Buddha statues these days. You find them in garden centres and various other places.
Do you mind that?
No. It's interesting, because people are obviously attracted to something which shows that calmness. And just about every film you see, there's a Buddha statue in the background. So there's something about that image which is to convey our true state. This is what your potential is. You're capable of being like this. The Buddha means awakened one. So it means that you're he's someone who points the way to finding this state. So it reminds us of what we're here for.
You mentioned Buddhist scriptures in the past. Is there an equivalent of the Bible or the Quran, or where do the scriptures come from?
Well, there isn't a kind of equivalent of the Bible. Buddhism isn't a belief system. You must believe it before you're a Buddhist. It's much more, you don't have to believe anything. If it's true, it'll stand up to scrutiny. So you're encouraged to question. And if it's this is what how the Buddha taught, he people questioned him, and he said, well, if you can see that this isn't true, then I'm interested, because I'm interested in truth. Mm. And so questioning is very important, but you really do need to not just take it because I've said it, or someone else has said it, or the Buddha said it. Is it actually true? You have to prove it true for you. There isn't something external to all of this. There isn't this idea of a separate creator God in Buddhism, but there is very much a sense that we're absolutely, everything is interconnected and flowing together, so that you're responsible because of that. You can't just blame someone else. You are responsible for your actions. You're part of this. So in a sense, you have to be a spiritual adult and realize that our actions affect everyone else.
Sayadaw, for the time being, thank you very much. We're going to find out more about Tibetan Buddhism in just a moment, and then a little later on we'll be hearing from some of the other people that gather here at the Telford Buddhist Priory to find out what being a Buddhist means for them in Shropshire in 2005. That's coming shortly here on BBC Radio Shropshire 96.
Your station.
BBC Radio Shropshire 96 FM with Jim Hawkins. On Friday morning we're talking about Buddhism on the programme this morning. It came as news to me when someone told me a couple of months ago that there was a Buddhist priory in Telford. That's where I am at the moment, with a group of people who meet and gather here. We've already heard from Reverend Sayadaw Kenaway, who's the Buddhist monk here. But what does it mean to be a Buddhist in Western society? What does it mean to be a Buddhist living in Telford on a day-to-day basis? Let's talk to some of the people that meet us. Let's go around from left to right. First of all, you can introduce yourselves.
Hello, I'm Diane.
I'm Mark.
Nick.
Karen.
James.
John.
Dave.
What does it mean on a day-to-day, everyday, 24 hours a day basis, what does it mean to be a Buddhist?
To be a Buddhist is simply to live a normal daily life, really. It's on the surface, it doesn't look that you're doing anything different to anybody else. I suppose in different traditions, the emphasis is on different aspects of the practice. In this tradition, it has to do with meditation, and it has to do with keeping the precepts. The precepts, at first glance, look like something like the Ten Commandments, but actually they're just guidelines. They actually give you, if you like, moral values by which to live, and they have to do with trying your best not to lie, trying your best not to steal or to kill. On a basic level, that could mean don't kill another human being. Mm. If you look at it more closely, you can actually see that there's lots of other things that we kill besides human life. So most Buddhists are actually vegetarians. You can also kill things like time, for instance. So it's the meditation itself helps you to be aware in everyday life and helps you to keep those precepts.
So on a day-to-day basis then, there are things that you would do and there are things that you wouldn't do.
I think partly it's thinking about what you're doing and the consequences of what you're doing, so that you might have ideas about what you're trying to do. And then sometimes, of course, you do things that, are not perhaps what you want to do. Mm. And it's thinking a bit about what your intentions are, what the effects of your behaviour are. And sometimes also you might intend to do good, but sometimes end up not doing good as a result. So it's being thoughtful about what you do, how you live, what you're trying to do with other people.
It's a very good point, actually, James has made there, in that being thoughtful, the Buddhists call it being mindful. It's one of the cornerstones of all types of Buddhism, I think. And if you can, it's a very difficult thing to practice, but if you continually in your life you can be mindful of what you're doing, you just lead a happy life. And on a practical level, in day-to-day living, it's just very helpful. It's helpful to yourself and it's helpful to everyone around you, especially in the workplace. It's a practical tool in the workplace. Mindfulness is just very, very rewarding.
Tell me a bit more about this. Tell me about mindfulness in the workplace. You're at work. What difference does it make to you?
I think you're not sort of being chased around. It's trying to just do in
one thing at a time. I know that sounds as though, oh, well, we're all doing more than one thing at a time, but if you can be mindfulness about that, you do tend to probably achieve more than, you know, if you've been thinking of the next job or next job to do. So it is, and it's a case of while you're doing something, is being mindful of that particular job, not with your mind saying, oh, I've got to go and make that phone call, or I've got to do this, do that. It's a case of trying to do just that one job, and really that's the mindfulness, especially in the workplace.
And yeah. Also, if you're working in an organisation, you can focus on your job, what your needs are at work, and I need to do this, I need to do that, and you notice other people doing things that might interfere with that. And sometimes it's thinking about the needs of other people around you in terms of their parts of their job that are important to them and how to try and cooperate with them, and thinking beyond yourself in terms of just your job and what you need to do.
Do you sometimes find that it brings you into conflict with the way that Western society operates, or the way that most people think?
Well, not really, no. Well, most people are in conflict with everybody they meet. You do tend to, you do tend to find a little lack of harmony in the world today. But our meditation practice is one of just being aware. So when we sit and we be aware of what's going on in your mind and your body. So if you can fairly easily take that out of here and be aware of what you're doing and the way you interact with the world. Where you interact with your partner, with where you're behaving, driving a car, the way you do things. So if you just be aware of what is going on quietly, then your life's bound to change. You're just going to find things that you'd rather not do. It's not so much that they're wrong and certain things are right. It's just that things don't sit easily with you. Mm. If you sit and you become still and your mind just calms down, it's less frantic, you do find that life flows rather more easily than it used to. And you can go through the world and you can see a lot of people not getting on with each other and quite a bit of conflict, you know, the old road rage stuff and all this. And on a bad day you may get dragged into that, but on a good day, when you've been keeping up your practice, you see how it feels for yourself. When you get drawn into conflict, when you get drawn into road rage, and you think, perhaps I don't have to do this. Mm. So the practice is to be aware of what you're doing, see how that feels, don't judge it, but just try and change things a little bit. So it's not black and white, right and wrong. You can get on with the rest of the world because you're not going out there telling them they shouldn't be doing this, they shouldn't be doing that. All you're doing is concentrating on your own practice, awareness of what you do, how you react with other people, and trying just to be a little bit more calm and reasonable. And sometimes we do it.
I actually find that the conflict in itself can be helpful, because when two things are sort of clashing against one another, to be still in the middle of that, sort of drives you deeper into your understanding of the way things are. And usually you find that when there is conflict, at the centre of that, there's actually something very real and very true. And just sort of, instead of kind of diving in there and getting mixed up with it all, if you can just take a second just to be still, quite often, it's actually quite revealing, actually. Shows you things about yourself and also the nature of the way things are.
But you're taking a second to be still, or taking some time to be still in the middle of this frantic, frenetic Western society, which regards anyone sitting apparently doing nothing as wasting their time, apparently doing something which can't be quantified or the results of which can't be counted as wasting their time. How do you deal with that?
I think you could measure that. You can only measure that personally by the change that you feel as your practice goes on. and the acid test is it helpful? And if my or other people's experience, and I can only judge that for me, I can't say whether it'd be helpful for somebody else, but it has been helpful for me. It's helped me to spot patterns of behaviour which aren't terribly helpful where I'm stuck. As Karen said, if there's conflict, if you're lucky enough, you can spot that there's some of you in there. There's some of you that's keeping that going, that's feeding it, or there's a bit of pride you don't want to look at, or whatever it happens to be. So, and you may not spot it first time round, but as you begin to see the pattern and you think, I'm doing that again, I'm getting worked up, and you, as Karen says, you delve a bit deeper and have a look at it, not analyse it, but just watch it arise, watch it fade, and just spot the pattern, you get some insight as to what, how you might do it differently.
Can that get uncomfortable sometimes, that if you're looking closely at what you're doing and why you're doing it, you might feel rather less than happy with yourself and what you're doing? Well,
that is why most people come to do this practice, is because somewhere along the line in their life they've looked at the way they are living and felt less than happy about it.
Mm. Is that true for you?
Yes, but I'm not going into detail.
Can't blame me for asking.
I don't blame you for asking at all. I'm getting older now, so I'm not as aggressive as I used to be. But I used to cut trees for a living, and I lived in wilder parts of Scotland with some of the wilder people of Scotland. And we tended to do enough work to get us to the pub at the weekend when you have quite vigorous discussions, you know. And so I kind of felt really happy with the strength and that I had at that time. Then I moved down to this area because I was getting rather old for that, living that life. And I'd always wanted to try this meditation, not knowing what it was, you know. And so I tried this form of meditation, being convinced that this would straighten me out, as they say, you know, kind of. And it doesn't straighten you out. What happens is when you become aware of what is going on in your mind and the way it affects your body, you stop wanting to do certain things and you stop wanting to behave in that kind of way. So you straighten yourself out. There is no external meditation thing that will, no magic bullet, that's just see what you're doing, see the consequences of it, and try to let go of that. And do it for a time and you will make progress, probably. I hope I make progress anyway.
I think you've inadvertently told me the story anyway, so thank you. And anyone else got a similar or an entirely different experience of how they came to this, to the ownership?
Well, I was brought up as a Catholic, and in the 1950s it was very much sort of hellfire and brimstone, and as a sort of young child I just couldn't accept that there was a God that would behave in that sort of way. I sort of formed my own ideas, I think, and then one day I actually picked up a book on Buddhism, and lo and behold there were people in the world that thought as I did. It was many years before I was lucky enough to find a group that I was able to practice with. But I think I was calling myself a Buddhist since I was about 10 or 11, and I actually found some books of the subject and realised that that's how I was. You know, I'm Buddhist because of what I believe, not the other way around, really.
What does it mean to you?
Well, I think it's just me. That's just the way I am. Being a Catholic did give me, I look back now and see that it did give me a very good sound basis in spirituality, but I just think that the way it was taught, the way it is taught, was wrong. I can look at it now and see there's a lot of good teaching in it, but it wasn't for me. This is for me. I think the Hindus have a lovely description of the Ganges, as they call it, Mother Ganges. And that's a God who will accept anybody, and you can just walk into it and you're just accepted. And I think that is what Buddhism means to me. You're just accepted, no matter what or who you are. And as John said, there is no right or wrong. And that doesn't mean there isn't morality, but it's not that you are not condemned. We are all capable of some of the more serious errors in life, and there for the grace of God. So that's why I'm Buddhist.
What do people say when you tell them that you're a Buddhist? Or for people listening to this program who've never consciously met a Buddhist, what would you say to them?
People are generally interested, I find, because it's not, because you don't meet many Buddhists really, and Buddhists generally don't really normally shout it from the treetops. So people are generally interested, and especially interested, people I meet anyway, in the meditation part of it. And to be honest, they don't actually go much beyond that. They're not really, all they want to know is how to calm their head in the stressful world, and they don't really go much beyond that. But I generally find people very interested in it.
Yeah, I think people are interested. They want to know what it does for you. They want to know what it's like. They're curious. And I think many people seem to, when you talk a little bit about it, say, oh, yeah, that makes sense to me a bit. You know, and it is a very sensible practice. It does make a lot of sense.
And if there was one thing that you would want people listening to this to take away from it about Buddhism, what would it be?
Well, I think for me, you know, when you're in a position where you're asking yourself, you know, what is the point in life? What's the meaning in life? I would say, for me, I found that Buddhism helped me ask those questions and also gives me some of the answers.
And my thanks to the people I met at the Buddhist Priory the other evening, those being Diane, Mark, Nick, James, John, Dave, Karen, and of course the Reverend Sido Kenway as well. If you want to find out more about that, then get in touch with us. We can put you in touch with them. Or if you do a search for Telford Buddhist Priory online, then you can find out all the information about what they do and where they are. 6 minutes to 11, BBC Radio Shropshire, 96 FM with Jim and Till.